Hey, good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show. Good morning, Marissa. How's it going?
It is going fabulous. I love my new house. I moved.
I know. You've been on the go. You've been hectic. It's got to feel nice to actually have a place called home, right?
It does. I like it. It's beautiful out here.
That's what I'm talking about. You know what's also beautiful? One of my favorite guitar players of all times. And on this day, you know I love to do this at the top of the show. On this day in 1968, Jimi Hendrix released his third album, Electric Ladyland. So if you're a huge music fanatic like myself, go and listen to that album front to back, because that's the only way to enjoy it. But we got a
Well, I was just going to say a quick little trivia about Jimi Hendrix, because it is in the season of voting. And did you know that when he did the Star Spangled Banner at Woodstock, it caused a lot of controversy. And he came out and said that it was his feeling of beauty with America and rock and roll.
So. That's right. And everybody since has been trying to emulate what Jimi Hendrix did, just like how Metallica always plays the Star-Spangled Banner at a giant stadium. But we got a great show for everybody out there today, because our Just Talking guest is Jesse Alkes. He is the director and cinematographer of award-winning film Pariah Dog. And we also got us returning to the Strike Accord segment, the Blowies, to celebrate their debut album that dropped today. So you're going to be hearing some of that brand new music here for the first time on the Chris Collins Show. And if you missed last week's episode with the cast of Colors, John Carter and Joseph DePacchiacchipo, and our Strike Accord artist from Queens, New York, The Phoenix Within, you can check out all those segments exclusively on our YouTube channel. All right, Marissa, it's time to rock and roll. Our guest on Just Talking is Jesse Alkes. He's going to be here to discuss his award-winning film, Pariah Dog. So, Jesse, how's it going, my friend?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about. And I love how we always get so lucky, Marissa, to be interviewing people from all over the globe. And you're in Alaska right now, Jesse?
I'm in Alaska, yeah.
That's insane.
Is, is it cold there right now? Like, how cold is it?
I mean, not inside. It's fine.
I know. It's like, it's supposed to be fall, and it still feels like we're roasting ourselves out here in SoCal.
We had a fake fall last week. We are back in summer, 100 degrees. I know. I'm Dantless once again.
I had to make sure I wasn't dreaming. I saw frost on the roof like for the very first time last week. Now it's gone. But hey, we're here during Just Talking because we're going to be talking about your award-winning film that you deserve all the praise for. And before we even begin, because we are a video on air production, might as well play the trailer for Pariah Dog. So let's show the viewing audience what you can expect in Jesse's film.
You gotta hold on. I wasn't prepared for that.
Well, here, let me throw it out.
I'm pulling it up right now. We're good.
Rock and roll, fam.
Yes, because it is that amazing. All
right. That was awkward. Okay.
No, it's not awkward.
Okay, rock and roll. That shot right there, it's never easy to see. But, you know, for the listening audience who has no idea what Pariah Dog is all about, can you explain the premise of your new film?
Yeah, it's Pariah Dogs is, there's uncounted numbers of street dogs in India. They're, it's not really gotten into in the film, but they're native dogs that have been there for tens of thousands of years and have always been sort of semi-domesticated. They're the closest thing to the original domesticated dog we have. Mm. And they've always kind of lived this symbiotic relationship with humans. And the film is about four people in Calcutta, India, who take care of these stray dogs to try to sort of find meaning in their lives. Maybe, and they're all kind of people that are having some kind of struggles with that. So also outsiders themselves.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, Jesse. And from first glance, I feel like I have a bad case of Lulu Wang, because I was kind of judging you by your appearance, because I go, when I look at you, you don't resonate as someone who would tell a story of pariah dog in India. So was this like a passion project, or did you get lucky and have a studio go, hey, look, we have an opportunity for you to go fly halfway across the globe, and you just took that opportunity? Or was this something that you've been passionate about for a long time?
No, I mean, if someone wants to fly me around the globe, I'm all for that.
That has never happened.
But no, I'd been going to Calcutta for another reason for about 5 years before I made the film, and I just wanted to do it. It was a total passion project. And I put all my own money into it, and I spent 5 years making the film. I moved to Calcutta. I stayed there for the better part of 4 or 5 years, depending on how you count it. Worked with all local people making it, lived with the family there, went by myself. So it was like that. So thanks for not Lulu Wanging me. Appreciate that.
I mean, you must have been like how Chino Moreno used to describe it with Deftones. You must have been like the white pony in India. I mean, you must have been stuck out there like for five. Well, how long were you out there for? At least five, or did you?
It depending how you counted it. Like, it was kind of three straight, and then I came back. I edited the film there, which like allowed me to have people like my collaborators sort of give me input on the edit, which is super helpful. I just went back and spent another like 4 or 5 months there. I was there up until the pandemic hit. So
wow.
It's kind of 5 years on and off I've been going back and forth.
And I have to tell listeners, when you go to watch this, please turn the little words at the bottom, turn them on. What is this called? I can't remember right now.
Subtitles. The words that
come across. And you had to turn those on, because I started watching the film and I was like, man, I wish I knew what they were saying, because it's right? And then I was like, why don't I turn the subtitles on? And so I did, and I had to rewatch it. But it
drives me crazy that they're not on by default, but what can you say? This is the way.
Don't pull a Marissa.
Is that an Amazon move right that away. Slipped on that notion? Oh, wow.
Believe me, we've had a lot of discussions with Amazon about the subtitles.
Yeah.
Wow.
But they are there. They're as good as we can get them with Amazon, and you have to enable.
so
pre-warded. No, you have to enable it, because I'm here. Yes. The thought I love so much about this film is you were following people as they were kind of taking care of these dogs. So I saw a lot of dogs, but I also saw parts of real Indians' lives who aren't just what I see on television, but people going for the day-to-day grind who aren't rich, who are just trying to take care of these animals, and listening to their conversations, to their friends and so on. I was like breaking my heart the whole movie.
Yeah, especially, and there was a particular line in the film that kind of stuck with me, and there was a line, it was at the dog show, kind of a little spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, but there's the individual who said, the cruelty of human beings is increasing day by day. Try to retain some love. Love is decreasing in human beings day by day. We can't stop feeding the cats and dogs. They have no guardian. So, you know, when I was thinking about that, I kept thinking about the film is like, to me, has a bigger picture than just following the pariah dog. It's really kind of showing the mass population of poverty that you see within humans and animals. And was that kind of something that you were trying to get across in your film, Jesse?
I'll tell you, poverty wasn't really a focus for me. I think like if I went there to make a film about poverty, which many foreign filmmakers do, it's like kind of a cliche, I would have shot a different film. I think that what you are getting at there that I was trying to sort of reach is that like the people that we all cast, including Shibroto, made that speech, are all people who sort of are looking at the world in general and not able to accept like cruelty and indifference and suffering just on a very personal level.
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of really what it's about for me. And I think that the people in the film are struggling. They're not at like the bottom of the scale for the most part.
Okay.
But they're all sort of dealing with that crisis of like, why isn't the world like a kinder place?
Well, couldn't you put it in the same notion of like, let's say I'll speak of Los Angeles, because I'm in here in SoCal. It's like, I always make that Well, it's kind of a sad joke. You know, it's like we don't put any investment into the homelessness because there's no money in return out of it. It's just like, why care for the pariah dogs when you're not going to get anything out of it? Oh, you're shaking your head. How do you feel, Jesse?
Yeah, well, there's two things there, right? Like, first of all, India has a lot of problems. So, like, for a lot of people, there are people that really need help in India, and they don't see the value of putting a lot of attention into this stray dog issue or making sure their lives are better. On the second part, like the homelessness in LA, just for FYI, like if you, when Indians travel to the United States, they are absolutely shocked to see that. Because that's
really,
I
would be shocked. I would think so too.
That's not what they think the United States is like. And if you take an Indian to Skid Row in LA, they will not believe that this is happening in the United States.
I didn't even think about that. That they assume that everybody has housing in America because we are a first world country.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you're thinking about the entertainment capital of the world as well, too. And I'm sure when you're not from the United States and you just hear about L.A., you just think about Shaquille O'Neal, think about Kobe Bryant, the L.A. Lakers, everything's happy. But, you know, that's kind of a fascinating aspect. And what I was kind of peculiar about was yourself, Jesse. I mean, did you have to learn Hindi before you even went to India? Or, like, how did you even know you got the right talking points for your film if you didn't speak that language?
It was difficult. They speak Bengali in that part of India.
Okay.
And I did study the language. I'm terrible with languages. So I studied for some months. I learned to read the script. And I picked up some conversations with Bengali, but I had my sound recordist who was with me on the film. I shot the film with three people, myself, a sound recordist, and an assistant camera guy. And my sound recordist, who became sort of a collaborator, assistant director, co-writer, he was also functioning as translator. So we would get sort of on the set rough translations and sort of meet together, what's going on here in this scene. And then I got full transcripts later. The problem was we were dealing with such a small budget and the transcripts were coming back very late. And sometimes I didn't know specifically what was specifically said in a scene for months.
Until you watched it on Amazon Prime with subtitles.
Yeah, you gotta make sure it was enabled.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, because I was kind of fascinated by that because I know that, you know, you would think, you know, if you're learning and investing your time into that language, I'm sure that there's some cultural things in India that you're probably missing right now because you're in Alaska, and I can only imagine. Is there Indian food that you're missing out there that you're just craving for?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I was not really big on Bengali food. It's very, very different than what we know as
what is Indian it, like food. Water and noodles? I mean, is that what it is?
No, in Eastern India, they eat a lot of fish. They eat a lot of stuff with mustard sauce, and they eat rice. So those are sort of the staples there, and it's completely different than what we would think of. Like, people here, they know.
Yeah,
like,
is it raw fish? Because I feel like Big Sean, like, I couldn't do all that. Like, I don't the texture and all that kind of stuff. Like, nah.
No. People there have not, and there's, like, sushi places are starting to open up there, and people are very freaked out by it for the most part.
Because of the mercury.
Raw fish. Right.
Yeah, just raw
fish. That's not part of the culture there. So.
Yeah.
So, that's okay, interesting. Is the food there spicy? Because I know that when I went to, so I had Indian food in America. It's good. I went to England and their Indian food is so much better and spicier. And I was like in love with it. So what about an India food? Like real India
It's
food.
Like 10 times the spice.
Oh my God.
I mean, and not just heat, but just spice in general. There's just like oil and spice and anything like flavor. It's really intense. And we get a sort of watered down version. And I realized when I came back here, I went to an Indian restaurant the guy there, after I ate, the waiter who was Indian asked me, I had told him I'd been in India, and he said, well, what did you think? I said, he said, bland, right? I said, yeah. He says, you have to order it Indian style, and then we'll give you the real spice.
Yeah, it's like a secret. It's like you're going to In-N-Out and you're going, I want the Flying Dutchman. You go, what does that even mean? Yeah. It's not a secret menu. But, you know, I think it's really cool that you've had that opportunity to travel around the world. And kind of what I was hearing previously when you just jumped on to Just Talking is like, you'll take any opportunity just to travel. And every single time when I was growing up, especially all through college, I kept getting pressured like, Chris, you got to go and travel while you're young. And I think, Jesse, I feel like you're speaking to that notion. Do you think it's important for the youth to travel while they're young? Because there's going to be a time where we're going to be out of this pandemic. And what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I wish that I did more of it. I mean, I traveled some when I was younger, but, this is a super privilege to be able to travel around the world.
Right.
Like most people in the world can't do this. Yeah. We always have to be sort of aware of that, you know? But like the fact that I was able sort of through luck and circumstance to go and especially live in another country like this, that was so different, it's very eye opening. So if there's like exchange programs you can do, if there's anything like that, when this opens up, I would encourage everybody to do it, because one thing that it definitely changed for me, even going, much later, you know, I didn't visit India till I was in my 30s. It gave me a different perspective on USA, you know, and on what we do and what's normal and what's not. So
you had put in your on your Facebook, as I stalk you, you had talked the little puppy with we saw in the clip with the leg, the little tiny puppy. You had mentioned how you had actually taken it after the shooting and then put it and try to get it help. Can you tell me about that, like that experience on there? Because I would think that that would be like the right thing to do, but you had like another different, what can I say, experience trying to save, as a Westerner, trying to save this little puppy.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was, that was a early on in the shoot, and it was a big learning experience for me, because I saw that puppy and I was leaving. I was a scouting trip, so I had a hard time. I had to leave, and I took the puppy as I was leaving to a shelter. And in the end, I realized, first of all, it was probably not the best place to take it in general. Second of all, once I got there and I sort of had driven all this way and brought in this money and they told me the puppy's going to die here quickly from disease. And we don't generally leave them, you know?
Oh my God.
And so what I felt like I took away from that was like, you know, I was coming in as a Westerner and I was trying to insert myself and like fix this situation. And I mean, yeah, that dog was in a terrible spot. If I could have taken it or found someone to take it, that would have been much better. But at that point, I was not fully embedded there. And so I kind of realized, you know, like a lot of times as Westerners, we'll go to countries that might have different challenges than we're used to. Right. And we'll sort of want it just to be like, oh, let's just like fix this all so that I can feel better about it. You know?
Right. And you got that.
Well, you had said that the locals were actually taking care of the puppy.
They were. There was people there that were feeding it. I saw people like they would put food down and they would throw rocks at other dogs so the puppy could eat. It was in a terrible spot, but I mean, and I did ask them before I took the puppy, but I'm not sure, you know, was that the right thing to do?
Well, I feel like we all kind of have that same compassion and love for animals. I mean, you know, you hear it right in the beginning of your film that there was a certain individual that had a huge dream of saving up his money so he can buy a mansion just so he can have dogs. And I think he said cats too, just running around. But I mean, I've always dreamed of that. But the thing is, it's kind of the sad truth is that's not really a reality that can ever happen. And what are some of your advices that you've learned in India that maybe we can obtain here in America that we can do on a short-term level of helping these animals who are lost or don't have a home, or even rescue dogs on a level?
Well, if anyone wants to get involved with the issues in India, there are great organizations on our website, pariahdog.com. There's a links page. We have a lot of good information or organizations that we've dealt with there that help. But other than that, it's difficult to say, like, you know, if you tell Indians that we put to death so many, like at one point it was 2 million dogs a year in the United States. Mm. that's another thing that horrifies them, because the idea that we're sort of continuously killing dogs because we don't want dogs on the street is unbelievable to them. So
Would only prefer, Indians would only prefer that you take them down when they are badly diseased, or let's say they broke two legs. I mean, would they just let a dog walk around? I mean, that one clip that we showed in the teaser, the two back legs of the dog was completely shot out. Yeah. I mean, you would see in America, if that happened, most of the time you would have someone put it down.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of dogs that, I mean, it's very difficult to say, because, you know, at one point in the film, in an earlier cut, I had also footage of a dog with that same injury that had lived to adulthood. Wow. And was cruising around the city like that, balancing himself on his front two legs. So
it seems, you know, like America, we just look at him and go, that's a sore eye. I don't want to look at a cripple.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't, no, I, like, true. Let's get rid of it. That, you know, while India, it's kind of, they want to take it in.
Look, this is another thing that I think that, like, living abroad in countries that are very different than ours, we realize something about America too, which is that, like, if you're staying in a place like this, you know, we intentionally shelter ourselves from a lot of harsh realities, you know, including, like, the most visceral thing for me living over there was our food, you know, where when I explained it, I mean, if you go to buy a chicken in India, you pick out a live chicken, they cut its head off, and they pluck it, and you take it home, and you
eat it. Oh, hell no.
You know? I would be vegetarian. See,
and then us in the U.S. go, that's cruelty. I want it perfectly shipped. I want it to look beautiful when I walk into Stater Brothers. I don't want to see the live chicken with feather on it.
And I tell the people there as a joke, because it always gets people, like, so crazy. I said, well, we just like to have, we go to the store, and there's, like, a plastic package with legs, and we don't really think, oh, that's from an animal. Those are just their drumsticks.
Well, Jesse, I just want to say congrats on your award-winning film. You did a fabulous job on Pariah Dog. And for the listening audience that's tuning on in, where can they watch your film?
So you can watch the film on Amazon Prime Rentals and Apple TV/iTunes, and there are links to both of those on our website, www.pariahdogmovie.com.
That's what I'm talking about, Jesse. Thank you again for joining Just Talking on the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show.
Thanks for having me on.
That's right. Our guest on Strike a Chord, we welcome back the Blowies, joining us all the way from Austin, Texas. So we're excited because we're going to be celebrating their debut album. And how's it going, my friend? How you doing? I'm stoked I got both of you guys in here, Sam and Tucker, because I kept hearing that Sam was coming on. You know, holy. Yay. So this is great. Congrats, guys. I mean, to me, you guys have heard it. And you know what? Even before we even begin, I don't think one band has been on the show at least three times in a year for the Chris Collins Show. So you guys have broken that record, but I'm stoked to bring you guys back on. I've been telling all the listening audience, if you guys have seen the Blowies previously, this is, to me, the most anticipated album of the year. And I'm beyond stoked that you guys have made room in your guys' schedule to come on the Strike a Chord so we could discuss this. And obviously, for any of the listening audience who has no idea what the Blowies, this is a very politically charged album. So if you get easily offended, this might not be the album for you. But voting's coming around the corner, and I really wanted to ask you guys this, because why is it so important for millennials to go out and vote this November?
Well, first of all, thank you again so much for having us on.
Absolutely, Tucker.
Yeah. Sam, do you want to take this, or –
You take it, Tucker.
I'll take it. All right. So why it's important for millennials to vote, that was the question, right?
Absolutely, yep.
Well, this is what, taking a hold of our destiny is. I'm a millennial as well. And, I think if we want to have a say in what goes on in the world, now's our chance, you know? Because no other government in the world, historically speaking, has allowed, people of any generation to take the the power into their own hands, and this is the way we do it. It's not clean. It's messy. It feels like we're getting defeated a lot, but you know, this is the time where it really counts. Every vote, even if it's incremental change, it's worth it.
Absolutely. And let me throw this at Sam, because my big discussion, I mean, off sides from the show, I'm always thinking, will millennials, how did I phrase it? Let me read it right off how I put it. I put, do you believe millennials and the youth will shatter expectations by voting in large numbers this November? Because honestly, with myself, I still have no faith. I really do. I mean, do you guys have a little bit of, do you guys have better faith than I do?
I don't know. I mean, clearly that's an important thing to have.
Absolutely.
Young voters. And, you know, some polls show that maybe there are more young voters registered to vote this year. I heard in Texas there's record numbers of registered voters as compared to 2016.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't remember the number, but
yeah, because millennials, we're supposed to be the largest voting bloc now. We're like 51%. And imagine if we just actually had millennials go out and vote, because Marissa, you're better at explaining this than I am, but you know, we really didn't show up for the primaries.
Yeah, so what happened was, when we showed up for 2016 primaries with Bernie, when that kind of went DNC sour, then a lot of the millennials and the youth just didn't show up for the 2016 presidentials, and they did not show up in the nominations this time around, which is one reason why we have Biden and not a Bernie or Buttigieg or whatever you want to have.
Or anything, right.
Here. Yeah, it's because the millennials did not show up. So with this early voting and now everything kind of coming through, is I'm interested to see if people come up, because it's not just about the presidents.
So let's throw it like this. I'll throw it at Tucker and Sam. We'll do a little betting over under, right? Do you think 60% of millennials will show up and vote this November, over or under? Tucker?
I'll go over.
Okay. Sam, what you thinking?
I'm thinking over too.
Okay, I'm over. Like it.
I'm over also, but we're going to be stuck at 70.
I hope that
that's
the case. I really do hope that's the case, and I want to leave enough time, because I love this song. It's super funny. It's very upbeat. We're about to be playing it right now on the Chris Collins Show. This song is called Dick in Chief. I don't want a dictator for president. That's right. That's the Blowies, and that's their song, Dick in Chief. And hopefully they blow away our expectations and the millennials go out there and vote.
Okay, but by the way, I actually already bought your guys' album this morning.
Let's go.
So it's already on my phone, ready to like rock out with my daughter later on today on our walk. So it was really, really, really good.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, guys. And like we were saying before, this is your debut album. Today is the day. And what is Tucker and Sam doing to celebrate the occasion? I know we're on lockdown, but I'm sure you guys got some special plans happening, right?
I know
we're
Tucker
doing an interview with you.
Yes!
Let's go! Yeah, that's how you start off a morning.
Y'all, today is Tucker's birthday. So let's wish him a happy birthday.
Happy birthday, brother.
Oh, my gosh. Happy, happy birthday. Happy birthday to
you. That's great. You're going to remember this for years to come, man. I mean, you guys, seriously, congrats on the album. This is – it's a really well-done album, and one of my favorite songs off that – on the record is Selfie Fucks. It's really funny. And every time I listen to that song, I think about that comedian Tim Dillon where he goes like, you know, like everybody today just wants to be a model. And they go, yeah, my name's Valencia. They literally named an Instagram filter after me. Like, that's how good I am. Right. And one of the big craze in the last 2 weeks was Netflix's film Social Dilemma. Mm-hmm. And it's been making its round with the youth, kind of freaking people out. And during our TLDR, we were discussing a little bit about censorship happening with the social media behemoths. Are you guys concerned what these social media companies are doing to users of their platform? What do you think, Tucker?
I haven't seen the documentary.
Or just your expectations. I mean, I know this week, right? I mean, we all saw that a New York Post, you know, published a story about Hunter Biden. And it's like, who cares about the story? I'm just really talking about, are you concerned about what social media is doing by blocking out a link? You know, because I'm always thinking you should think for yourself.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about it. And here's why. Social media, it's like when the printing press was first invented. History lesson for you guys. When the printing press was first invented, all of a sudden, stories were being published. Nobody knew whether they were true or not or anything. And nobody had a system yet for filtering through all this stuff. And over the years, obviously, society has developed a system for designating what is news, what is fiction, what is nonfiction, all this stuff. And right now we don't have that for social media. And because they're private companies, we've, instead of imposing government regulation on them, where, because our Congress doesn't understand any of that shit.
Well, they're baby boomers. Right. They didn't grow up with the iPhones.
Instead of them imposing the regulation, which they've asked for, they've asked these companies to regulate themselves, you know? So what you get is this, and there's some hesitancy and some inconsistency to, censor.
Right.
It's dangerous in a way, but you do need to have some sort of system.
Well, I'm a big believer of them being on social media, being it flagged. Being like, this has not been checked yet, or, you know, the warning, they do the stuff with the COVID, big warning sign.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have noticed.
And doing that versus taking it off. Because that's why he apologized for Twitter, is he took away the link without saying why he took it away.
Well, and it's also because they do have third-party groups, which are supposed to be fact-checkers, but they never even fact-checked it. They said that it was because of a photo that was in the New York Post, that's why they felt like they needed to block the link. And I think that's always kind of crazy in my opinion. I mean, Sam, what do you think? I mean, do you think it's cool that, you know, social media behemoths, that's what I call them, they're multi-billion-dollar companies. Are you cool with them flagging your content? I mean, let's put it like this. I kind of joked last year that the censorship was out of control, you know, like, baby, it's cold outside. You know, and everybody was getting so upset over that. Now we got wet-ass pussy. It might literally come to a time where social media might literally start censoring everything. It might even come after your music. On a level, you might say something in your lyrical content that might upset the president. Maybe you might get sense. Hey, Tucker, I see that little eyebrow going. What do you think, bro?
I'll let Sam answer this one.
You got called out, Sam.
Well, I think it's important that people, you know, make their do their own research and know, like, have an informed opinion about things and take everything on social media and what you see on the internet with, like, a grain of salt, because, you know, it might be altered or might have been removed or something, you know? So I think that's important. As far as censoring our music, I mean, go for it, I guess.
You sound it. Like D. Snyder now. You know, he's like, you're coming after me, Gorse? Forget that. But hey, we want to leave enough time so we play your guys' track. I love this song. This song is called Selfie Fuck. So if you got a little kid in the room, get him out or get him jumping. I don't know. Either or. But here it is. This is the Blowies. This is Selfie Fucks.
Look at me. I got something to say.
That's right. That is the Blowies, and that's their new track, Selfie Fucks. And I love it, dude. It's super, super good. But you know what's funny? I wanted to revisit a talking point that we previously had, and that was on our Music Storm part two. So if anybody hasn't checked that out, you can check that out exclusively on our YouTube channel. But we were kind of pressuring you guys a little bit about the vinyls. And the reason I want to kind of mention that is, for the first time this year, vinyls outsold CDs.
Outsold. You're like, outsold.
Sorry, outsold. Basic white girl over here. Outsold. Are you guys considering doing a pink vinyl? I mean, I think you guys' album would look so sexy on a pink vinyl.
I think, yeah, I mean, of course we'd love that. Go ahead, Tucker.
Make it like 500 limited, like a limited edition, 500, like the Blowies pink. Like, it would be
We would totally be open to doing a vinyl, but we need, like, everybody in the world to go and stream our music so that we have enough of those, like, percentage of a percentage of a percentage of a penny to add up and
that's so true. And
it's
and
expensive.
That's
Prince,
very expensive.
No, it's true, Tucker. Yeah, you're on the right, and Marissa, you are too. I mean, you guys, if we want to see a vinyl listening audience, go ahead and start streaming like crazy all day on Spotify and support them. I mean, where can they buy your guys' album?
Well, we're also going to be selling some CDs next week. We did a short run of just regular CDs, and we're going to be selling them in a bundle with like a t-shirt, koozie, stickers, all of the Blowies merch, some special surprises in there. And the CD itself.
I want the t-shirt.
You wish, Chris.
I want the t-shirt, and Chris wants the blow-up doll. That's
I was
priority.
Hoping for it. I thought that was one of the bundles. I mean, I thought I was going to – maybe it was a raffle to get the original Blowie that formed the band, right?
We'll send a special one to you, Chris.
Rock and roll.
What's cool about the CDs, though, is I don't know if you've seen our album cover.
Yes.
That just came out, but it's an ear with earplugs on it that we tape on. So on the CD, we actually got the physical CD printed, and then we have actual pink earplugs that we are taping onto the physical thing. So
really?
You could have a physical thing.
That's
I don't know. That's
mentioned.
Special.
Yeah,
that's
right.
a little different.
It is a little different. I mean, the last time I've seen something of that kind of nature was like Metallica's Death Magnetic, but everybody kind of said that kind of looked something different than what they wanted it to be, if you catch my drift. And if you don't know what the album cover looks like, go and look it up on your own time.
It's like but, a coffin. Oh, yeah. Okay,
you get what I'm, yeah, you yeah, get where I'm going at with this. But hey, I love to ask this question with bands recently, and I'll throw this at Sam first. You know, sometimes, you know, you get in a funk, and the creativity level just sinks to an all-time low. And what are some hobbies that you do to kind of bring back up your musicality when things are not going your way?
Man. Selfie fucking. Sorry.
Nice.
What was that,
nice.
Selfie fucking?
I find that, you know, having like, you know, like this, having them around all the time is, you know, just looking at them is inspiration enough. And then getting together with friends, you know, we went through a slump in March, April, May, June, and July and August, where like we couldn't see anyone really, and we couldn't really get together with people besides like this. And it's not really easy to collaborate, but
yeah, never.
You know, if we're willing to branch out and go to like, you know, hang out outside somewhere with a couple acoustic guitars, I think that's really inspirational too, and helpful to get kind of out of that.
Right.
You know,
no, I definitely, I feel you. And just keep writing. I know that we're celebrating today with the debut album. I would encourage you guys to keep writing. And I want to leave enough time so we play one more song during Strike a Chord for you guys. I love this track. It's called Russian Democracy. Let's let the song speak for itself.
Present.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about. That is Russian Democracy. And I don't think anybody in America has really done a song like that of Russia. So well done, boys. Well done.
That needs to be like, honestly, that needs to be Biden's like campaign music. Like,
yeah, imagine
to go against
imagine
Trump.
You guys are just watching TV and someone starts playing the Blowies new album during a Biden campaign.
I would love it. It's so funny.
I think we need to make that happen.
That would be the best endorsement.
Hey Biden, yep. So if you're listening, yeah. The boy said
that's what I want for my birthday. That's what I want for my
yes,
birthday.
Yes, that's a good birthday present.
I'm not even running, but if I get endorsed by Biden, that would mean everything to us. But guys, again,
Biden congrats. For blowies, man.
Biden for blowies. Biden for blowies. I like that a lot.
Well, guys, again, Sam and Tucker, congrats on the release of your debut album.
Thank you.
And be on the lookout for next week because that's when the bundles go out, right? I mean, that's if you want to get that physical 3D look that they were talking about. You got to be on the lookout for the blowies. Check them out. And guys, thank you again for joining Strike
and
Core on the Chris
birthday,
College Show.
Tucker. Happy birthday, Tucker.
See, that's all I got. Happy birthday, Tucker.
Bye, you guys.
All right, bye, y'all. Thank you.
See you guys. Thanks so much.
And Chris, who is our next week's guest?
I'm actually really excited about this, and I want to take my time while I'm doing this because we got a jam-packed show. I mean, this is a Chris Collins Show special episode. We've been working our asses off for the last couple months, and we are creating a Millennial Vote 2020 episode. And I got to tell you, we got Brock Pierce, who is currently running for president of the United States under the Independent Party. He's an independent candidate. We also got Joe Collins, who is currently running for Congress in the California 43rd Congressional District, which is super exciting. We also got Katie Williams, who's returning to the show, but joining us for the Millennial Vote. And she is currently running for Clark County School Board, District B in Nevada. We also got Adam Christensen. I mean, it keeps going, Marissa. Adam Christensen, he is currently running for Congress in Florida's 3rd Congressional District, and he is a Democrat. And we also got Eddie Scarry, and this is big. I mean, he's a nationally recognized journalist focusing on politics and culture for the Washington Examiner. So we're beyond stoked. And for everybody who has missed our previous episodes, if you go to our chriscollinsshow.com, you can see all the episodes live on that page. And if you want to become a member today and support the show, go there. You know the drill. So, Marissa, this has been great. I'll see you next week, fam. Peace.
Ciao, Bellas.
Let me try be honest, I'm not used to this. I tell lies to avoid having to be honest. They don't come.
You wanna put a man in misery. You wanna be a star with your life for you. You want you. Olympics with the flit, yeah, my wrist should get a medal. Yeah. Trying to keep my medal, I've been lost in a day.
On what low should feel like, and whoa, I'm sensing trouble, whoa, can't let you go.
Uh-huh.
heart of gold. No feelings made it hard to cope. You learn it's easily broken, then so you guard it close. Came a long way, but still got far to go.